from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a Gel Flex Grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Here on a Saturday morning on The Game, Evan Giddings, Dan DeVoe, Carter Chickering, Holy Trinity, rocking with you 9 to noon as we do as always. Dan, my man, I see you're perspirating, the lather's going on, you're gleaning. What's going on, my man?
Well, you know I do those up-downs before the show just to get mentally and physically prepared for the next 3 hours. And I like that. The Holy Trinity, this is sort of like the Wishbone backfield back in the day. We got Carter, yep. Big Chick, Brandon Staley joins us once again. I don't know where the hell he's been for the last month. And by the way, I need a written excuse if you're gonna show up to one of our shows, but let's do this, man. Yeah, I'm sweating, but I'm ready to go, man. Had to sprint here. It was a little close, but we're just under the wire.
Well, look, but before we get into the Bay Bridge series, before we get into the latest from 49ers training camp, which Carter was down, by the way, in Santa Clara earlier this week. I want to get his thoughts on that. Also, a couple Warriors updates for you. I do got to ask you, because, look, you're up before the Roosters. You're up before the chickens are crawling, and before I got to go walk my dog at about 6 a.m. this morning. He's jumping on me, batting me around, saying, get the hell up. Where are you? What are you doing? Dan DeVoe's already up and getting his 3 miles in. So you're up at the crack of dawn, and you still find some time, not just for us, but then you're also headed right to the airport after. Like, do you ever stop in life for a moment and maybe I want to just take a breath?
No, all the time. I think that it's sort of a misperception of what it is that you think my lifestyle entails, but today's a little crazy because I do have a 1:15 flight out to New York City, and the show's done at noon, so what's the over and under that I catch that thing?
I'd say 22 and a half minutes. I think you'd be all right from here to SFO, not too bad. Especially if you got an Uber or, I don't know, Carter uses Waymo, whatever, Lyft is going on, whatever these transportation devices.
Waymo's the thing, man. Waymo, I'm a Waymo guy. Waymo literally pulled over for sirens. Like, how does it know? Like, when you hear the sirens of that of a fire truck, which was a good half mile away, it pulled over to the right. I'm like, man, Waymo, my man.
Dude, I was reading about the social experiment that you could stop a Waymo car with a balloon. If you throw a balloon in front of a Waymo, it will stop. That's the reason I can't get in those things. I cannot do it. There has to be someone in the front seat of my car, whether it's a robot, whether it's a dog. It has to be something with at least a semblance of a pulse for me to believe that I'm going to get to my location on time.
I think that Waymo, we're going to think of Waymo and driverless cars much like that of the rotary telephone in like 20 to 25 years. You're going to be like, really? You guys used to drive? Are you kidding me? Like, what's that key for the ignition? Like, what are you guys doing?
Oh, Waymo's going to be in the sky in 25 years.
Yeah, that's true. We'll go Jetsons before long.
Yeah, I don't look. Me and Carter are heading out to the opposite side of the bridge today for the first game of the final two Bay Bridge Series games between the Oakland Athletics and the San Francisco Giants. That's kind of where I want to start.
What's
today,
the over and under that you guys drink a half rack? Go ahead.
Just depends on what kind of what kind of beverage you're talking here. You know, Coke Zero, maybe mixed with something else.
So yeah. I'm hearing, before we get into this, that, you know, the A's take a lot of hit, obviously, for the amenities or the lack thereof out there. What's the name of where it is that they play these days? I don't even know.
Oakland lost track. Coliseum.
Is it still the Coliseum? All right. The Oakland Alameda County Coliseum.
I mean, the place is going to be around after the nuclear bomb hits. Let's be honest. It's like a cockroach. You
but
can't
if you go
it.
Pound for pound, food for food, obviously, you know, Chase crushes them, right? Or Oracle.
Oracle, yeah, of course.
But the chicken strips, from what I understand, apparently the nod goes to Oakland. Can you lend any sort of insight?
Well, I don't know about the chicken strips because as a kid, Dan, you pretty much just stopped over at Subway, grabbed the $5 footlong, and then stuck it into the building. But I do know that I was able to recently convert one Carter Chickering. He's got his Giants hat on today. Might as well have the split cap going on. But was able to convert him over to the Oakland side. So, Carter, I know that, look, I took you, what was it, a month or two ago to your first Oakland A's game. Now that you have the lay of the land, now that you know that the Bay Bridge Series, you will see one in Oakland. I actually do think it's going to be quite packed. There'll probably be at least 25,000 people, which for the Coliseum is quite a lot. What are you most looking forward to later on today? Uh-oh. Got to pot that up.
Our producer needs to pot up his own mic.
Uh-oh.
To see that stunning stadium, of course.
Oh, and that was the first thing that came out of his mouth when he walked through the Dennis Eckersley gate. No, look, what I'm looking forward to, quite honestly, is the, I don't know, just the experience, right? I think that's kind of all a lot of A's fans, and I'm one of them, that have sort of left to cling to, is this idea that, you know, Bay Area baseball has always been two-sided. You got two sides of the bridge. You got multiple choices. Used to be the Raiders on that side as well, the Golden State Warriors. And so there was somewhat of a rivalry. Look, you're a city kid, Dan, so I feel like we can have this conversation.
Sure.
You know, growing up, I do think there was this identity of having your teams represent you and your side of the bridge. And this is essentially the final severance of that identity. There is not going to be any more East Bay sports, or at least at the Major League, National Basketball, and then, of course, National Football League level. There's still going to be, like, I think the Oakland Roots are still going to play at the Coliseum next year. You obviously have the San Jose Sharks. But as far as dual teams, dual options, there is none of that anymore, because the Warriors now play on this side of the bridge that we work in. The San Francisco 49ers are here. The Oakland Raiders are gone. They're in Vegas. And the Oakland A's will be leaving soon, heading up to Sacramento. So when I ask you what you think of when you hear the Bay Bridge Series, is it 89? Is it, you know, your friends that you used to try and throw eggs at when they brought A's gear to the city? Like, what do you think of?
So my old man, obviously we were from the city, but he spent a lot of time working in the East Bay. So I grew up going to Oakland A's games. I was an Oakland A's guy. And I would always be that guy that was defending the Oakland A's. And when I was a kid, there were serious arguments. You would go back and forth. But I would say, yeah, to me, it culminated probably in the Bay Bridge Series, the real Bay Bridge Series in 89. I think that when San Francisco, and they built the ballpark downtown, and all the money and the arrival of Barry Bonds, they went into another stratosphere. And it was no longer sort of this competitive dual market. It was now the San Francisco Giants and the little train that possibly could, that being the Oakland A's. This clearly became more of a one market, and then this other thing out there in Oakland. And every time they overachieved, that was the operative word. It's like, how is this team doing it in this small market with this small budget? They were much like that of the Tampa Bay Rays, as opposed to being thought of like that of a powerhouse, like that of their brethren, the San Francisco Giants. Mm. I haven't seen this as being sort of a rivalry on equal footing for more than a decade. You got to go back a ways when I could really think of Oakland being sort of that team that could go eyeball to eyeball with San Francisco on so many different levels. But I will say this, since the All-Star break, I want to say 14-4, one of the best records over the last 3 weeks to a month. So there's things to get excited about Oakland, but I'd like to get your thoughts because you're much more into this than I.
Well, the thing that sucks, and look, I mean, as far as the game goes, you know, the A's are playing good baseball. The Giants, we can get to, they're 500 team. I think a lot of people have sort of buried their postseason chances with the losing 3 of 4 to the Atlanta Braves. They're now 4.5 back. They lost the tiebreaker. you know, the season is not looking great for the Giants, and the season sort of began on the wrong footing for the A's, knowing that they were going to head up north. As far as this series goes, and I'd be happy to take any calls of people that are going to be out there at the game later on today. I'll be up in Section 320 along with Carter Chickering. Feel free to come by. If you want to buy me a beer, I'd be happy to take one. No, but the point is, in 888-957-9570, you know, kind of what are your experiences as a Bay Bridge series rivalry participant? You know, what do you think of when you think of the Bay Bridge series, and what do you think is leaving? That's kind of my question to the audience first here on Saturdays on the game with Evan Giddings and Dan Devone. Because when I think of this rivalry, and it's less to me, Dan, about the A's versus the Giants, because I think you're right. I mean, the rivalry has never really been, you know, it's not like a Niners and Raiders was. It's not too tumultuous. It's never gotten violent. I always enjoyed it because I felt like it was pretty cordial. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like there was a mutual respect between both sides and both franchises. I think it's also because neither team outside of the 89 area has really been that competitive at the same time.
Yeah.
Typically, they've taken turns in the spotlight. Now, the Giants, of course, had their run 2010 through 14. The A's had some good teams, and I think that's probably the most recent best both sides of the bridge baseball that we've seen. The A's 2012 to 2014, you know, with the likes of Donaldson, Cespedes, all the rest, and of course the Giants with Posey, Mad Bum, Sandoval. They had some pretty good teams. But when I think of the Bay Bridge series and kind of the culmination of it, honestly, I think of the severance of this golden age in Bay Area sports. And what I mean by that is this. The city of Oakland, from 1975 up until 2018, saw 10 championships, starting with the Golden State Warriors in 75, the Oakland Raiders in 1980, 1983. Then you move, of course, to, well, I guess you got to go back actually 72. I apologize, to the three-peat of the A's in the 70s. You have 72, 73, 74, the Golden State Warriors in 75, the Raiders of the early 80s, and then the Warriors playing in Oakland. I know they were the Golden State Warriors, but they played the Oakland Arena at Oracle, and they racked up a total of three championships there up until 2018. So you got 10 titles. Amazing. On that side of the bridge. And then also to bring in San Francisco during that period from 81 until 2022, you got 9 championships. Of course, 5 for the San Francisco 49ers, 3 that we just discussed for the San Francisco Giants, and then, of course, 2022 when the Warriors had moved over here, they got their first in San Francisco at Chase Center. So the Bay Area between both sides of the bridge has seen 19 championships in 47 years. That's a championship every 2.5 years. Between those three major sports. And that, to me, is what is sad about this being the end of it, is that whether you're a fan of Oakland sports, whether you're a fan of San Francisco sports, they have always held a very high standard, not just here in the Bay, but across all of sports. You know, Boston talks about being title town, or New York City being the mecca of sports. In a lot of ways, the Bay Area between both sides of the bridge have set the standard for what it is to be a championship-worthy area. And they're not going to have that anymore because the Raiders are gone, the Warriors are on this side of the bridge, and the Oakland A's will be leaving soon. Now, I understand not all of those teams in Oakland have been competitive as of recently, but over the course of 50 years, again, 19 championships is a lot to kind of bask in. And together, they've put forth one of the greatest runs, you know, of the last half century. And that, to me, is what is kind of coming to an end. So when I think of the Bay Bridge series, I don't necessarily think of the individual rivalry between franchises, but what I think of are two franchises, two sides of the bridge coming together and elevating this area into what has become known as a great sports town, a great sports set of cities. And that's no longer going to be the case.
It's sad. It's sad in the regard that what's happened to Oakland, because it's all about the money and how money has changed sports. And I think Exhibit A is Oakland. Because when you talk about their championships and their titles, those were back primarily in the 70s, 72, 73, 74 with the A's. And, of course, the Raiders won one in the late 70s. And, of course, the Warriors and Rick Barry were in the mid-70s.
76 and 80, I apologize. That was in Oakland. 83 was in L.A.
And when you think about San Francisco, it's more relevant. And the reason is that Oakland back in the day, it's a small market. But small markets could coexist with some of the bigger markets and still be competitive. But what happened is that the money has just exponentially gone through the roof. Where if you're a small market, you just simply cannot compete, especially at the baseball level. And as far as football and basketball are concerned, well, it becomes about proximity and in terms of drawing from the San Francisco area as opposed to Oakland. And so what's done in Oakland at the end of the day, it's sort of what's driving the sports today, and that is money. Money in at every level and every sport. And while Oakland could compete 3 decades ago, that simply is not the case in 2024, unfortunately.
And it's because they choose not to. I mean, this isn't an owner, and we don't have to, you know, litigate the history. Look, it's a foregone conclusion. The team is moving to Sacramento. Unfortunately, there's not much worth going over. But it is because of ownership, and it is because of what you're talking about. It is because, and we're seeing it not just here in the Bay, but we're seeing it all across the country. Teams want their towns to pay for them to stay, to prove to them that they deserve to be a city that has a sports team. And the asking price just continues to climb exponentially. You know, if you want to keep a team, the owner is going to try and extract every single possible dollar out of you. And that's why I feel like we are very lucky with the Golden State Warriors and the fact that an owner and an ownership group led by Joe Lacob was able to find a way to privately fund, you know, a castle on the water in Chase Center. That's very rare. That doesn't happen very often. And it should be the case, but unfortunately it's not. So, you know, I'm looking forward to going out there and just kind of, I don't know, remembering, like, again, all of the great players that have walked through, not just that building, but have worn both the jerseys. Because I do think it is about San Francisco and Oakland. Not San Francisco versus Oakland, although they'd be playing on the field. But players that have worn and donned those jerseys throughout the years. And you just go down the list, and it is so long, and it is full of yellow and gold jackets. And it's just full of players that, I don't know, are the reason why you like sports. I mean, I don't know about you. I grew up in the East Bay, and the Oakland Coliseum was a place that I fell in love with the game of baseball at. I don't really know why. I mean, you know, you're just going to a game and you're a kid. But there's something about it, that the mood, the fans, it was kind of infectious. I enjoy going to Giants games as well. I enjoy going to baseball games. And I think the birthplace of that love for me was at the Coliseum. And I think it was for a lot of people. So, again, 888-957-9570. If there's any memories or things you'd like to share about the Bay Bridge series. And, again, the final two games between the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants are going to be this weekend.
How old were you when Mount Davis came about?
Mount Davis was probably erected far before. I mean, the Raiders moved back, what was it? In the late 80s, early 90s?
That's what changed the landscape for me.
Yeah.
That you talk about just ruining a ballpark from a baseball perspective. It's, I cannot, I'll never forget, it's indelible that memory of walking into the Coliseum the first time they closed off the bleachers in center field and had Mount Davis out there. And it was the most suffocating feeling I've ever felt in the ballpark, especially there, where, of course, when you would, you know, you'd sit behind the plate or down either line and you could look out and you could see beyond the bleachers and out to the East Bay Hills. And it was just, it was one of the most picturesque ballparks. Yeah, I'll say that. Prior to the, you know, to that disgusting, whatever it is that whoever came up with the idea, well, obviously they did it for the Raiders to bring them back, but not taking the Oakland A's into account and what it did in terms of ruining the beautification of that stadium was just, to me, that was the end all. I had a hard time enjoying myself at an A's game from that point forward.
No, and I think in a way that kind of, you know, set the tone for where we are of, you know, basically certain sites placating to specific franchises. I mean, Mount Davis was built because it was a way to lure the Raiders back from Los Angeles to Oakland. They were able to add an extra 20,000 seats, and it was started being built in the mid-1990s, finished in 1996. So I was 2 years old. Like, I don't know the Coliseum pre-Mount Davis. I will fully admit that. But it never really was about Mount Davis for me. Like, I grew up going to games and wasn't the biggest Raiders fan, though I had a lot of friends who are Raiders fans. So it was a common, you know, I enjoyed watching Rolando McClain tackle guys at shortstop, and that was the way it was towards September. Actually, around this time, honestly, the Raiders will be playing preseason games at the Coliseum. And it just, I don't know, it's a place that to me is kind of whatever you make it. You know, Carter, jokingly earlier described, the first thing he thought about, or the first thing he's going to notice is, the beauty of the stadium. It's not a beautiful place. We don't have to sugarcoat it. But it's whatever you make of it, right? Like, I remember, a lot of different things that went down in that place. Some good, some bad. I fell in love there. I got my heart broken there. I had my 18th birthday there. I will be having my 30th birthday there tomorrow.
Romance creeps into every platform.
I've cracked quite a few of those at the Oakland Coliseum. I went to my first baseball game there. I remember Miguel Tejada walk-off. I remember Yonas Cespedes' first home run on domestic soil. I remember watching, one of the Bay Area legend, Tyson Ross's MLB debut. He came out of the bullpen and faced a 42-year-old Ken Griffey Jr., who was at the edge of the end of his career. Like, there's so many things that just kind of pop into mind, and I feel like that's what people go down that sort of memory lane whenever they step into that place.
I know we didn't prep this off the top of my head, so I didn't give you a heads up on this, but if we were to go position by position, maybe we can just stop at third base, start and stop there. And obviously for the Bay Bridge World Series, but I don't know, who's your best third baseman of all time for the Giants? Pablo?
For the Giants? Am I allowed to, like, of this era?
Whatever. You can go back in the day.
Matt Williams, probably.
Oh, Matt Williams. Okay. Yeah. Matt Williams. No,
but I mean, Pablo's had the biggest moments, for sure.
So if you were to put them up, and this is sort of, this is solving nothing in the world, certainly in terms of the Middle East crisis, but if we were to determine who was better, if I was to give you the Oakland A's, I'll go Eric Chavez, and you go Matt Williams. Or who's a better third baseman for the A's? If you want to go back to the days.
Well, so this is the thing, is you really can go down the list. Like, I had a more intimate Chapman. You got Donaldson.
Donaldson back in the day.
Won MVP the year after he was traded. I mean,
actually, you go way back in the day, there's a guy named Captain Sal Bando.
Cardi Lansford wasn't too bad.
Cardi Lansford, good call.
So at shortstop,
Miggy, you got to go Miggy.
Miguel Tejada. Guy had a little bit of extra help, should we say, but he was a fantastic shortstop. Second base, probably go Jeff Kent between the two sides.
Well, I'm trying to think of a good second baseman for that of the Oakland A's.
Well, the guy who played the longest would be Dick Green, certainly. Like, Mark Ellis probably had the most games at second base for the Oakland A's. First base, probably Giambi.
Gotta go Giambi.
Probably be Giambi.
And much like the Tejada, he was in that era, but still, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he was...
He was an impossible.
But really, is he going to trump McCovey?
Oh, well, if you want to go that far back, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, McCovey, who, by the way, knocked out Cepeda, might have had a longer tenure in San Francisco if it wasn't for Pop. Behind home plate, Posey. I don't think there's a discussion there.
Fossey?
I'd probably take Steinbeck over Fossey.
Steinbeck? Yeah.
And then when you get to the outfield, it's kind of interesting. Left field, for sure, is Bonds. In center field, you're probably going down the list.
Coco Crisp.
Covelli Crisp. By the way, I actually got to meet Covelli, a.k.a. Coco Crisp, at an Oakland baseball camp he pulled up to in, I think it was at Greenman Field. I was like 13 years old. He pulled up in a Rolls Royce. I couldn't believe it. It was like Superman stepped out of the Batmobile. Switch that around. Batman stepped out of the Batmobile. But like Coco Crisp, also the thing that will always stick in my mind was him knocking out James Shields when he was a member of the Boston Red Sox. But
I'll give you Barry Bonds, but honorable mention, shout out Ricky Henderson. Right, we got to at least mention the name.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason he's not top of mind is because Bond's the greatest player I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I also, unfortunately, didn't get to see much of Ricky Henderson's, his prime. I saw him toward the end.
When he was playing for, 35 different teams.
Dude, the guy could still play. Yeah. I fully believe he probably still is
somewhere in Mexico under an alias.
And then in right field,
got to go Reggie.
Oh yeah, Reggie Jackson. See, this is where your knowledge is just.
Well, I'm trying to think. Right field has never been I don't know. Do you want to stick 100 pence? Or
100 pence is a good call. I'm biased towards Jermaine Dye.
Okay. Yeah, but Jermaine defensively was sort of a liability.
Oh, he's a gold glover.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, the guy got a cannon. But
so much for that take.
Well, no. I mean, look, there's so many. Like that's the thing, though. It's hard to just whittle it down to one player outside of a couple different positions. And I, you know, and there's so many random players that pop into your mind. You know, like my favorite right fielder to watch was Josh Reddick.
Josh Reddick. Well, that was that 2012. That was a fun run with Cespedes, Reddick, Donaldson. Didn't they have that kid Seth Smith or what was the?
Yeah, Seth Smith had a big hit
out in the center field. Yeah,
I think it was the 2012 playoffs off Jose Valverde for the Detroit Tigers.
He was, and that was, yeah, those were fun teams. There was good personality. That was a fun run during that little 3 to 5 year window for the A's. So yeah, JJ Redick, who's still he's up with the Mariners. Who's
Josh Reddick.
Josh
yeah.
Reddick.
Yeah, last I checked. What was that, Carter? Oh, I got you. In that case, let's try to sneak a call in before we hit a break here. Let's go out to Vallejo, talk to our guy Skills. Skills, what's going on? Want to talk about the Battle of the Bay? What's going on?
JJ Redick.
Hey, good morning, Evan. Good morning, Evan. Good morning, Dan. Good to be on with you. I just wanted to share a quick story from the Battle of the Bay that I went to in 2009. And it was one of the most fun, memorable times I ever had at a game. And it didn't even really have to do with the game. It was the 20-year anniversary of the Giants winning the 89th pennant before they started winning World Series. So they were celebrating on the field. You know, they had all the players back and all that. Craig Lefferts, the former reliever, who must have been in his mid-50s by this point, came flying in, running full speed from the center field wall all the way to the infield. It was awesome to watch. But the most poignant moment, they got to Jose Uribe, who, of course, had passed away a couple years before that. Juan Uribe happened to be on the team, his cousin, and they presented his wife, who was in Jose's place, with something. I forget what it was they presented her with. But she fell apart right there on the field, and Juan was there to comfort her. It was a really nice moment between the Uribe family right there on the field. Then Randy Johnson goes out, wins his 302nd career game, 7 innings. It was just a great time. I'm going to miss the A's. I'm a Giants fan, have been since 90. I'm going to miss the A's. It's really terrible that they're leaving like this. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate that, Skills. Yeah, I think there's a lot of players, or a lot of people that
I'll
that
never
feel
forget
that way.
Hank Greenwald, who used to call San Francisco Giant games, and his son, I believe, broadcast for the team from time to time. He was just had the driest wit, absolute classic. And so Jose Uribe played with the St. Louis Cardinals, traded to the San Francisco Giants, but his name was Jose Gonzalez, and he was thrown into the deal at the very end. His name was Jose Gonzalez with the Cardinals, changed it to Jose Uribe. And as he came to the Giants, Hank Greenwald, as only Hank Greenwald could do, talked about the trade, and after Jose Uribe had officially changed his name, said, yes, he is officially and will always be known as the player to be named later. Yeah, I sort of blew the bit there. But Jose Uribe, part of that Roger Craig run. Yeah, Craig Lefferts out of the University of Arizona, the left-hander. Yes, he used to sprint in from one of the first true characters coming out of him and Al Herbosky back in the day.
And we got to hit a break here, but you also just touched on something that also contributes to this rivalry, which is the list of broadcasters that have broadcasted for
Bill
those
King,
two teams.
Though, begins and ends there.
I mean, Monty Moore, Lon Simmons, John Miller. Those are just the list of guys that have broadcasted for both.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just one side or the other.
Well, Monty Moore only did the A's.
But Lon Simmons.
Sure.
And, you know, of course, the late John Miller. John Miller got his start with the Oakland Athletics, in fact.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he's still doing it. It's incredible. But when we come back, I do want to shift this a little bit, of course, to some more baseball specifics. Just trying to figure out what the future of baseball is in the Bay Area. I have some thoughts on that. Also coming up, the San Francisco 49ers, John Lynch, I thought had some interesting comments yesterday, as did Kyle Shanahan. I thought he was very revealing at the podium yesterday, his stance on where things are with not just Brandon Ayuk, but also Trent Williams. And then we even got some Warriors news to come up. That's coming up as we roll along here on Saturdays on 95.7 The Game. Evan
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. you get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kings and Dan Devone. We're back after this.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Gettings, Dan Devone with Carter Chickering rocking with you here on a Saturday morning, as we do always on 95.7 The Game. Going down memory lane a little bit, final Bay Bridge series this weekend. Look, the Giants are 62-62. The A's, I think, 18 games under 500. The game's less about baseball, I think, than it is a celebration of what baseball used to be in the Bay Area, and unfortunately where it's headed, which is up north in Sacramento. There's still going to be games between them and all the rest, Dan, but you know, you grew up going to A's games. I obviously grew up going to A's games. We're from opposite sides of the bridge, but it does feel like, and this is what I've sort of seen having gone to some A's and Giants games at both sides over the last couple of years, there just appears to be, I don't know, like an understanding. Baseball fans are a little different, I think, than, you know, football and basketball, at least when you're attending. Like, when I think of a football rivalry game, I think of, you know, gladiators. I think of, you know, big rah-rah, parking lot, people yelling at each other. Maybe an occasional beer drank together, but it's not necessarily, like the parking lot. First of all, there aren't that many places you can tailgate anymore. Yeah, there's not many places you can go into a parking lot, sit down, get the barbecue out, throw some Franks on the grill, I don't know, toss the pigskin around. You just can't do that very many places anymore.
But you can in Oakland.
You still can. Well, at least for, you know, the next couple months. And I mean, that's what I'm going to be doing later today, probably doing a little bit tomorrow. And it's also, like, I was thinking about this actually when I was up in Seattle, your former neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they got a beautiful ballpark up there. They got a beautiful football stadium. I know a lot of Niners fans don't want to hear that, but Lumen Field is gorgeous. There's nowhere you can just sit before the game and hang out unless you're at a pub.
Well, again, it gets back to what I said earlier, how money has played such a significant role in changing the landscape of all of this. So most of the ballparks have moved downtown or south or north of a downtown area. And so what it is that they're trying to do is infuse the economy with all those surrounding pubs and bars. And so it's not about the fans and tailgating and bringing your own food and beverage, but rather going and spending money, because a lot of the economy in those downtown areas throughout whatever name your professional sport is reliant on the respective baseball teams. So again, the paradigm in all of this has just changed, and money has influenced a lot of it.
Where do you think Bay Area baseball goes from here? I do wonder. A theory that I have, and it's not... Look, the Giants are in kind of a tough place. Like, I was going through some of the Moneyball era teams, and I guess the A's are technically still in it. But since Billy Beane took over as general manager in 1998, the A's have only had one stretch in which they did not make the playoffs. It was like 1 out of 8 years. You know, they made the playoffs once in 8 years. Like, that was their worst postseason drought. The Giants are coming up, if they don't make the playoffs this season, in the Farhan Zaidi era, in 1 of 6. I do wonder if the San Francisco Giants, and they got a larger payroll, but the way that they are constructed, the way that the roster appears to be, Dan, it kind of does remind me a lot of the A's. The way that they're put together as far as, you know, jigsaw puzzling pieces cobbled, trying to figure out how they can sort of match this guy and use this particular player's strength. You know, a few younger players coming up here and there, but never a supremely dominant team. If they do have a season like 2021, it's kind of, you know, a band of losers coming together, guys you didn't expect to perform at the level that they did outside of a couple of mainstays. And I guess I'm just afraid for San Francisco Giants fans that when the A's are gone, that there's not really going to be much motivation from an ownership or upper management standpoint to basically try and put together the best product, because you're going to have everyone's attention anyways.
Well, I still think there's going to be the pressure to win and get to the playoffs, whether
you want to be competitive, but
A's are here or not. I don't know how much, you know, Farhan thinks about the Oakland A's. I mean, this could be his market, but his job is still in jeopardy. And although I think you believe he's still going to come back, I would say that when you're talking about comparing the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants, yeah, there are some connective tissues, but very, very dissimilar when you think about Billy Beane and Farhan. Because the Oakland A's clearly had a structure in place in terms of what it is that they wanted to do. And it started at the minor league level in terms of money ball and taking pitches and the sort of players that they wanted and all the algorithms. They were one of the first, right, to apply math to all of this. There was clearly a template in terms of what it is they were doing with these young castaways and these players that they just simply couldn't afford. And when they got to the point, like the Miguel Tejadas, the Giambis of the world, and they could demand that big money in free agents, well, then they would go somewhere else. And the A's knew this. But then they immediately would replenish them with a new core or recruits that would come in doing it the Oakland A's way. I would say that the San Francisco Giants, yes, they're young, they're old, but it seems much more misguided. I really don't know the direction of what it is that Farhan's trying to do here. And maybe we can get into this a little bit later, but I think a perfect example is when we did a show at the trade deadline 3 weeks ago, and he said, we can bring up the quote that Soler's out. This is going to be an opportunity for Luciano. Luciano played for 2 weeks and is back down. I mean, to me, when you think about Farhan and the direction of where it is that he wants to take the San Francisco Giants as opposed to Billy Beane back in the day, I have no idea what it is that Farhan's doing right now. And this isn't, you know, I didn't want to take it there where we pile on Farhan, but I think in comparing the two franchises, I think the Oakland A's back in their heyday clearly had an idea of what it is that they wanted to do and where they were going. And I don't think that can be applied to Farhan. But your point is well taken. When this market is all theirs, yeah, you're going to reap the benefits of from an economic standpoint, but I still believe that in professional sports that you still got to win, and especially for a team like that of the Giants that are synonymous with titles of that recent run, that, you know, the noose is getting a little tighter on guys like Farhan as well as Bob Melvin as the season goes along if they miss the playoffs.
Yeah, but even broadening it from the front office, maybe I'm just naive, but I do feel like when the A's are in Sacramento, there's less motivation to put out a product that will really, I should say, there's less of an incentive to go deeper into your coffers to get as competitive as possible. What I think the Giants are aiming towards,
what do you predicate that on? I'm curious.
It's just a theory I have, because anytime there's less competition in any market, you're not going to work as hard. I just think that's human nature. Like, I just feel like people become...
So you think they were that competitive with the Oakland A's these last 10 years?
No. I don't think they're competitive necessarily, but I do think that with the amount of money that you have to put into specific clubs, the amount of money that the Giants, for example, are paying this year, I don't think they ever want to pay this much money again for a team that's 500. I think they're going to try and find ways, whether it's with Farhan or somebody else that they get in here. I think they're going to try and find ways to decrease costs and remain competitive, to be good.
Well, I actually think that'll make them more competitive, but go ahead.
Well, I think getting rid of Farhan is, you know, that's a conversation we're going to have from now until whenever it happens.
Sure.
But as far as the Giants' direction, I don't know, Dan. Like, to me, I just don't think they're going to have an issue with filling that ballpark, no matter how good or bad they are. And not that it's because they're taking the 5,000 fans a game from the Oakland A's, but just the general interest of the team. I think there are so many disgruntled fans over in the East Bay, and I have a few of them that are friends. Look, if you're going to be a diehard A's fan and follow them up the sack and over to Las Vegas, that's your prerogative. If they are dead to you and you're never going to watch baseball again, I think that's also on the table. You know, how you deal with your fandom is completely up to you. But I also think, and I have a few of these friends that are going to start to become Giants fans because they love baseball and they love the Bay Area. And the only Bay Area baseball team left standing outside of, you know, the Oakland Ballers, but professional major league level baseball team is the San Francisco Giants. And I just feel like the Giants now, who have always sort of dominated the television market, there's less incentive for them to get competitive outside of just wanting it. And I haven't seen this ownership group, I don't know about you, Dan, I haven't seen this ownership group in San Francisco want it. I've seen them put people in place, you know, 10, 15 years ago that were smart and that helped them get to the mountaintop. But since that point, I haven't felt any, to take the words out of John Lynch's mouth yesterday, urgency to get this team out of the doldrums. I haven't seen it yet over the last 6 years.
So do you think that it's more of just sort of a financial play, much like that of the Chicago Cubs, if you ever spend any time in Chicago. Now, the Cubs obviously spend money, but for years and decades, the Cubs were just good playing 500 baseball. Why? Because it was Wrigley Field, for crying out loud. It was the north side, and it was just like another party. It was like another bar down there. And in the middle of the afternoon, when they played primarily their games, day games at Wrigley, you were going to sell out. And nobody was really there. I shouldn't say nobody. There were Cub fans, but you were there to much like you, find romance, as you did back in the day at the Coliseum, or have a cold one.
More on the field than off.
It was a play. It was someplace to hang out. And they financially benefited. And they knew that they could roll anybody out there. And they didn't necessarily play for World Series or for titles, but they were going to do well at the gate and financially and with all their merch and all those myriad of revenue arteries, and financially they were able to be competitive. So there's precedence here that if you're the San Francisco Giants and you're the only, you know, you're the only cow on the farm and you're just the last man standing, that economically you know that you're going to do well. And for a lot of people, that's sort of the bottom line. Look at Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah, they haven't been to a Super Bowl in 94, but that guy makes money hand over fist just simply because the product is relevant, just from a PR standpoint. So if that's the bottom line for the San Francisco Giants, then, I mean, yeah, it's sort of evident that they don't necessarily go as hard as other teams, and I think the Niners are a good comparison.
Well, to take your Cowboys analogy, I do think it's proven. There's a way to increase the value of your brand without actually winning. It's to be in the public light. And the Giants aren't, look, they're not a national, in my opinion, like, they're a historic franchise, but they are not, nationally speaking, a team that is known as one of the premier brands of baseball. They are historically great, but when you think of the MLB, when you think of Major League Baseball, I don't know where the Giants come up. They're not my top five. You know, they're not, unfortunately, they're not the Dodgers right now. They're certainly not the Yankees, even the Phillies to some extent. you know, there are other teams that I think that come up before them at this point. And right now, I think the Giants, look, one of the reasons that I think, I just feel like philosophically they've kind of morphed into an A's team with actual money is just the way that they've been run. It feels like they try to identify particular players that are hidden gems, diamonds in the rough, and kind of praying that they turn into something. And, well, not praying, but, you know, hoping. Like, the Giants, to me, Dan, and I don't feel like they have a direction. At least the A's had that at least 20 years ago. I don't think they really have had a direction the last few years outside of getting out of Oakland. But the San Francisco Giants are devoid of direction, and that is a place you do not want to be. However, if you're still making money and you're still breaking even and you're even pulling a profit, well, then why should you do business any differently? And again, I think it comes down to the bottom line for a lot of these owners of how much money you're making. And this year they're going to perhaps be losing money because of their payroll, because of the taxes that they've accrued. And I think that's also a reason why, to go back to the trade deadline, which you brought up a few minutes ago, is why they moved off of someone like Jorge Soler. It's not just because they wanted to get money off the books this season, but because they did not want any part of the remaining 36-ish, or I think maybe perhaps $26-ish million that were on the books in the future. You know, so I wonder what the Giants are going to do this offseason as far as spending goes, because they spent a ton of money this offseason, and it turned into a 500 ball club, or they already were the last 2 years anyways. And we know that sports are very reactionary. And a reaction to this season, to me, naturally, would just be to dial it back and say, well, if you're telling me, Farhan, or whoever is in charge at the end of this offseason, heading into next season, if you're telling me that we can cut payroll, slash it by, you know, $50 million, which isn't absurd, they're already a top 10 payroll team in MLB, if we could slash it by $50 million and still have a pretty good chance, you know, a decent chance to make that third wild card, maybe make a run, I don't see why ownership would push against that.
The thing you have to keep in mind is that the Giants make money. And so while they spent a lot of money this offseason, they have the money to spend it, okay? Especially when Crawford and a lot of those guys came off the books. The Giants are in the black as far as revenue in Major League Baseball, right? Like they're a team that makes money, which wherein lies a lot of the frustration. Because the New York Yankees make money, the Los Angeles Dodgers make money, but they also spend it. Nobody spends more money than those two teams. The Giants, I want to say, and I brought it up here, the Giants, so it goes Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, Giants.
As far as value.
In terms of value.
What? To me, that's even more of a reason why they shouldn't be doing anything differently.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah. No.
Like, if you're telling me they're the fourth highest valued franchise in Major League Baseball, well then, from an economic standpoint, they're right where they should be.
But I think at some point you got to win, because you can't, you won't, that won't, that's not sustainable. You got to throw in, at least get to the playoffs and be competitive, as the before mentioned teams are. So, you know, the Giants, listen, New York and LA are bigger markets, obviously. Those are the 1-2 markets in the country. I want to say San Francisco is somewhere around 6 or 7. So, at some point, you do have to be relevant as far as winning. I don't simply think you can mail it in over an extended period of time and still be profitable and not win at some point.
The most valuable franchise in sports in the world is the Dallas Cowboys. They just cracked the $10 billion mark. And I understand that they make the playoffs and they win games, but they're the proverbial punching bag of every pundit on television. I mean, they haven't won anything since 1995. I don't know if they've even got to an NFC championship since that point.
No.
This isn't a team that is known for winning over the last 30 years. That's courtesy of Carter. And they still, hand over fist, pulling money. The Giants, to a lesser extent, I just feel like do that. To a lesser extent. So the fact that they're still making money, the fact that they're still up there in the top five, I hear what you're saying, and to me that it sounds, that is the quintessential fan perspective. And if I'm covering the Giants, and I will be, and been out to a lot of games this year with Carter, and like you want to cover a great team. You want to cover a good team. It's more fun. You know, the media coverage is better. Players are more open. They're more talkative. The manager's having fun. You can josh with the clubby. You know, it's a party in the locker room. All that's great. But at the end of the day, if you're telling me that this San Francisco Giants franchise is worth the amount of money that it's worth and it's continuing to grow, well, then nobody in that boardroom or wherever they meet and in the ownership council is going to feel like they're in a poor place. And again, it's less of an incentive to me to try and go all in. Like, ideally, in a perfect world, the San Francisco Giants should operate the way that the Boston Red Sox did from about the year 2000 until perhaps 2018-19 when they handed it over to Kyle Bloom. And that is a team that is built on an analytic foundation, but willing to invest money and find players that can contribute at a very high level. The Boston Red Sox were the Moneyball A's with cash, and that's why they won the amount of World Series that they did. Now, they've taken a different direction, and they're trying to steer it back, but the San Francisco Giants, to me, they have a rich tradition that they also do a very good job of upholding. They honor their players, and most recently, the core forward, the bullpen members, all the rest. They have a great alumni network. They have people that come back, that believe in the team, players that speak greatly about this franchise, but they don't have the product. And I don't see an incentive right now for them to change the product when they're still being rewarded for it.
I don't know how fair it is to say that they haven't made an attempt and that they're just, you know, a team that's going to make money hand over fist regardless of what it is that they do. I honestly believe that they tried to go out and spend money. The difference between the Giants and San Francisco as opposed to the Dodgers and the Yankees and the before-mentioned Red Sox is that San Francisco specifically, the ballpark is unique in terms of, because when we're talking about spending money, I'm assuming we're talking about going out and getting whatever it is that the market bears in terms of free agents. Shohei Ohtani is not going to be Shohei Ohtani playing here. There's a reason why the San Francisco Giants don't play well at home, but yet go on the road and suddenly they hit home runs. And those home runs, when they come back here, are warning track outs. The team is built very in a unique. Think about when they were winning titles. It was gap to gap. It was triples alley, and it was pitching. It was sort of, you know, it was cobbled together, and you had that perfect sort of locker room, and there was a spirit. But building a winner in San Francisco is atypical than that of the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Red Sox, where you could just go out and get the biggest thumper that baseball has to offer, just let him sit on his heels and hit 35 jacks a year and give you 100 ribbies and be that guy. You're not doing that in San Francisco. See Jorge Soler. I mean, it's been proven time and time again that I think that part of in defending the San Francisco Giants, building a winner, it has to be a little bit, you have to be a little bit more innovative, and it's a little bit more challenging in San Francisco simply because the city, the ballpark, isn't conducive to getting those big name agents that oftentimes are the prize pigs in every offseason or free agency.
But I think that innovation, philosophically speaking, is where the A's do factor in, because, and it's not just because Farhan has ties to the A's, but I do think there is this idea that you can do more with less. And if it's going to cost you less, especially coming off of a season like this in which you invested the amount of money that you did, I just feel like, look, there's always a reaction at the end of every season for every sports team based on what happened in a probably, you know, small sample size. Well, the Giants have a large sample size. In fact, it's been the last 5 years, coming up on six. And that larger sample size, some years they've bought. Some years they've had to stand pat. Nothing has seemed to work. And so that's why I feel like the last three seasons, if you look at, you know, 500, last year there were four, it ended up three or four games below 500. This year they are literally a 500 baseball team. It does not matter how much money they've spent. And so to me, the natural correction for them is to try and lean into what you're talking about, which I think is, you know, building from the ground up. We've used the word rebuild a lot with the Giants, but leaning more into a developmental system. And that also means young, cheap labor. And so if you spend the amount of money that you have trying to get the Snells and the Chapmans and the Solaires to some extent, and it hasn't worked, well, then if I'm looking at this thing, you have not been able, as you know, a manager or a general manager, to extract a better result out of your talent. So again, like if we're at the radio station and you know things aren't going great, or they're going fantastic, you're going to find a way to get cheaper, because over the course of time, I don't know, to me, Dan, like it is natural for me to expect that the reaction to this season for the San Francisco Giants is going to be to get cheaper. And I don't think they're going to be any less competitive. And maybe we can get into that more on the other side. I also want to get your thoughts on the San Francisco 49ers, because they are a team that is competitive. They are a team that is looking at Super Bowl hopes this upcoming season. And Carter was also down at training camp this week. And there was a couple of things that came out yesterday. I know Friday isn't usually a news dump day, but there was a couple of things that caught my eye that I want to get into. And hour number two is re-roll on
Big
here.
Big chick next.
On Saturdays. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVone on 95.7 The Game. We're back after this.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.